place at the site when there is a crisis. This is part of the syllabus when we're talking about crisis management and human factors. And I think that this will be a very interesting talk, so please look at it.
Thank you very much for that nice introduction. And also thank you for inviting me to giving this lecture. A short introduction of myself. I have about 35 years of experience from the defense as manager, officer, engineer, as well as security advisor. So I was assigned the position as head of the security division of the Governmental Security and Service Organization, short time GSSO, in Norwegian DSS, by June 2007, a position I covered until the 12th of March 2012. By that day I was completely burned out after having spent absolutely too much time at my office since the terrorist attack. Not only at job, but my mind had more or less been working with troubleshooting and planning 24/7 for a period of 8 months. I realized that it would not be medically justifiable or to continue as I had been doing for the last 8 months. In my considerations, I also concluded that the given situation, I would not be the best one to handle the huge challenges we daily faced. My boss accepted my request for a release, and the day after, my doctor directed sick leave. That shortly after was diagnosed as post-traumatic stress syndrome. So 5 months later, probably too early, I went back to work to an undefined role as an advisor for the director of the GSSO. And since August 2013, I have been posted at the National Security Authority, NSM. And I have really got my inspiration and motivation back. I feel I can use my skills and experience, and I'm quite satisfied with working with advisory, conducting security audits at governmental authorities and other companies and affairs under the Act of the National Security Law. Please excuse me for having to keep stick or very close to my paper. It's the first time I give this presentation in English, and I'm really afraid that time will run out if I start to speak free, so please. That even Norway could be hit by a terrorist like the attack 22nd July 2011 was something the country was not sufficient prepared for. For most people it was realistic and more or less unbelievable. However, it happened, and I'm quite sure it will happen again. I'm sorry to say that. The question of the question to reflect upon are when, where, and by what means, and even more important, how prepared are we to meet such a situation? My aim with this lecture is to contribute with my personal lessons learned as input for discussion, reflections, and further development of readiness. Many of my lessons learned and statements given in this lecture has also been presented to different evaluations post 2207 for deeper analyze and improvement processes. In my presentation, I will focus on security management as well as human perspectives. I underline, however, that the content of the lecture is quite personal oriented, presented my subjective experience, understanding, and lessons learned based on what I met when I went through the minutes, hours, and months after the terrorist attack. And I fully accept and respect that others can have different pictures and opinions. So the agenda I will go through, I will give you a brief introduction to the GSSO. I will go of course through the minutes and days after the attack, and I will focus in the end on my lessons learned. So A short introduction to the GSSO, or DSS, the Norwegian name. As mentioned, I was head of the security department. And the entire DSS is covered here in the gray square. As you can see, it is, or it used to be, or it was at that time, an organization counting about 500 employees, supporting the ministries, the parliament, other users, the Supreme Court, with different services, among them the security services. The division I was head of, SAV, Sikkerhetsavdelingen, consisted of four different sections. It was the medical section, it was the reception, the people covering the different receptions around, the technical security, and the guarding section, containing six different shifts with people covering the guarding of the area. And the organization were also cooperating closely to Statsbygg here on this side, and also to different military organizations under the management of the Minister of Defense, and police organizations under the Minister of Justice. Statsbygg, on the left-hand side, is the public sector administration company, the government's key advisor in constructions and property affairs, building commissioner, property management, and property developer. So the year 2011, I had planned for a late summer vacation. The 22nd July, by 15:26 p.m., it was quite quiet in the ministry buildings. Most of the employees were either in the middle of the summer vacation or they had left their offices for weekend. The department I was head of was a 24/7 organization with about 30 of my employees on duty at that time, half of them in operational functions in the governmental square, like manning the guarding central, mobile guarding services, and manning the receptions. The other half were stationed at the Prime Minister's residence, Minister of Defense, and Minister of Environmental Affairs, located outside the governmental square. As mentioned, I was just to start my summer vacation that day, and for many months I had planned for an expedition to Galdhøpiggen, the highest mountain of Norway, 30 years after my last visit up there. I should now make the tour with my daughter, and we should depart Oslo very early Saturday morning. At my office, I had written and sent my summer greetings to my employees. The out-of-office assistant on my mailbox was activated, and budget authorities were transferred to my deputy. I was more than ready for the summer holiday I had been looking very forward to. In my office, I sat in my chair, changing for my bicycle clothing for the way home. In just 2 minutes, I would be on my bike, out the garage, passing the tower block for the last time in 4 weeks. However, the next seconds should change all my plans, and the coming hours, days, and months should expose me with bigger management and human challenges than I ever had met. So a brief overview of the governmental square. You have probably seen this picture in the newspaper many times. Here you have the Grubegata, where the terrorist car were coming. That's the place he parked his car and where he escaped. Here you have the tower block, where the Prime Minister is located on top. That's the Minister of Finance. Behind you are having the Supreme Court building. That's the Y block. My office was actually located in the first floor at that point. Here you are having another ministry building, R5, containing six different ministries. This Einar Gerhardsen place I will come back to. This building is R4, that I also will mention later on in my brief. So when the car bomb exploded, I was sitting in my chair with my back facing the window. The bang was extreme and noisy, but at my office there were no visual damage. The outside blinds were down, so I didn't suddenly understand what had happened. One of my colleagues, the only one left in the corridor together with me, he shouted out, "Shit, that was a bomb." We ran out the corridor in the direction of the reception, checking that nobody were left in any of the offices. And when I reached the reception and got the first impression of the damages, I understood how serious and critical the situation was. And my autopilot was activated. And I will come back to the autopilot a bit later on. So in the lobby area, the reception itself were hardly damaged, with broken windows. The receptionist had already evacuated. And some of the employees from the ministries located at floor 2 to 4 came running down the stairs, strongly influenced. When I looked outside, I saw several people there giving first aid to other injured. So from my position in the reception of the wire block, I gave my safe escape instructions to the few employees from the ministry coming down the stairs. And I also got time to make a telephone call to my wife, telling her, one, I'm okay. Second, there has been a terrible happening in the governmental square. And that gave me what I needed. I had informed her, I'm okay. I think the telephone was only 10 seconds long, but it was very important, the information to give at that stage. And when the wire block seemed to be empty, my autopilot told me that the best thing I then could do was to make a search through the entire block to ensure that nobody seriously injured people remained in their offices. And then I will say some words about autopilot. This figure illustrates two quite different ways of human acting. Our acting will always be based on what we sense. Here. Normally, the road from the sensory thalamus to the acting center, amygdala, is going through the computer of our brain, the sensory cortex, on top of the figure. When the autopilot is activated, however, what the psychologists call the lower road will be activated. When the lower road is activated, we are not computing, thinking, or reflecting at all before we are acting. We are more or less acting with the basis of our instincts. And the autopilot is, of course, not anything you can decide to activate. It just happens, pending your background, your training, your drilling for such a situation. Since the dramatic minutes, the 22nd July 2011, I have many hundred times put up the question, did I do the right thing when I decided to, or when I entered the wire block instead of going out to help injured people? I will, of course, never get any answer, any true answer to that question, but that's such things you get plenty of time to reflect upon after such a situation. What I met during my search for injured in the different corridors and flats of the wire block were shocking. Most windows were either completely powdered, broken in thousands of sharp fragments, or blown into the offices in flakes held together by the protection film, as you can see on the pictures here. Total chaos of furniture that had been moved from its original positions toward the corridor. And these furniture did also block the corridors. A number of locked doors I met around there, locked by employees being on holiday. So the lesson learned, close down your papers and keep the door open when you go for a holiday. So running around in the corridors, I did neither not feel any fear. In my dialogue and evaluation with the crisis psychiatrists post-attack, I have learned that it's quite normal to behave like this while you are in such a mode of autopilot. And during my search, I also made some few calls to alert my head director and head of sections that either were on holiday or had left office for a weekend. If you see this this picture, that's a picture from the office of the minister. She had strong windows inside, and they were of great value. Actually, if she had been sitting here when the bomb exploded, she would not have been affected very much by the bomb. They are hinged in the top. The frame is hinged. It's heavy, heavy glass. And they just move a little bit and then go back again. And here you see the corridors. Lesson learned, never store any furniture in the corridors. You also see the fragmented glass pieces around here. After completing my search in the wire block, I was quite glad to conclude that none were found dead or hard injured in that building. However, one of the offices, or at one of the offices behind the door blocked by furniture, we found one employee on his way up from the floor with small bleeding, probably in a state of shock. I moved toward the Einar Gerhardsen Square, the area from where the operational police and the police and rescue operation were managed. And on my short walk from the wire block to Einar Gerhardsen Square, I also passed obviously dead body and many injured people getting first aid, someone that had been inside the ministry buildings and others just having been at the wrong place at the wrong time. I realized that the size of the bomb must have been quite large and that a high number of people probably had been killed. Of course, I was also concerned about the outcome for my own employee in the reception located at the ground floor of the tower block. Right in here. I met my operational guard manager on duty at Einar Gerhardsen Square. He gave me a short situation brief, pointing out the exact place of the bomb detonation, informing me that the guarding central in the minus one floor of the tower block, just one floor below what you see here, was still operational. Even though a number of alarms were running continuously, water was dripping from the ceiling, and the ventilation had more or less stopped. The base radio system also had been out for some time, but was re-established at that moment. So the situation I imagined is not possible to describe by words. Fire alarm bells, emergency vehicle sirens, emergency personnel giving orders and screaming for assistance, volunteers, injured people waiting for evacuation assistance, fire and flames from the fourth floor of the R4 block, and a number of strange smells. At the same time, I imagined a strange silence. All the normal daily sounds had disappeared. For the rest of my life, I will bring with me the memories and imagines of a typical curtain situation. Hopefully, I will never again meet the same combination of use, smells and noise. At that stage of the crisis, I was back to normal modus of operandi. The autopilot was turned off and my acting was based upon sensing and consideration, where I needed all my experience and competence in my effort to make the right decisions. My focus was obtain overview of the situation, assist the rescue groups with knowledge about the infrastructure, where could they go with the fire alarm cars, where are the elevators, where are the stairs to the different blocks, and so on. I also was focused on keeping on to assembly key personnel for the crisis staff. finding a suitable location for the crisis staff of the GSSO, and of course clarifying status for my own personnel on duty. Initially, we established the crisis response cell in the Supreme Court building, located next to the ministry buildings. However, we just stayed there for less than 1 hour, as the police had to screen the entire building to be sure no explosives could have been placed there. We left the building moving towards Akersgaten and Grensen, a group of 10, including my head director, the security officer, and some other staff personnel. In front of one of the clothing shops in Grensen, we met the minister of our directing minister, Rigmor Aasrud, and the secretary of the minister, Ingrid Killengren, and it was quite surrealistic to give them the first lead-in brief about the situation in the at the pavement on what used to be one of the most crowded shopping streets in Oslo. So the hours and day to come were characterized by crisis management from our impromptu crisis staff location at P Hotel in Grensen, close to the governmental buildings. My organization, the GSSO, as well as the crisis management group of our ministry, had our base location in that hotel and ran separate as well as common meetings in regular frequencies. And the composition of the crisis staff were currently developed, pending who were available. You should bear in mind that the 22nd July was in the middle of the high holiday season, and a number of the staffs that should have been in the crisis staff were on vacation. And there were no written contingency plans that describes the meeting sequences or structure that regulated the crisis management the first days after 22nd of 7. Of course, the ministry as well as the GSSO had their generic contingency plans as basis, but so many factors did not fit into the plan. And in my mind, that will always be the case, and you have to be prepared to make your solutions where the plan doesn't fit. The determination was focused based on the contingency principles, responsibility, equality, subsidiarity. Decision to be taken at the lowest possible level and expanded authorities were given. My lesson learned from this stage of the crisis, especially the first days, are that an effective and professional troubleshooting and crisis management are dependent on the skills and experience of the individuals, and an expanded delegation of authority should be done to lowest possible level close to where the problems are located. I had to ascertain that one of my employees were killed by the bomb, another one severely injured, and some were less injured. We will probably never get a final picture telling how many individuals that will have to live with a post-traumatic distortion to smaller or larger extent. And all the 7 employees of the governmental medical service that also were under my direction were on vacation that critical day. However, the first one, a psychologist, reached the P Hotel and joined the crisis staff by 2200 the same day. The first debriefing of the operational security personnel, the guardmen and receptionists were arranged the first night, and day by day the medical group were supported by a growing number of voluntary doctors, psychologists and nurses that could develop the med team support for all the individuals in the different stages of their crisis at the ministries and the GSSO. Here you see the court building where we started with the crisis staff. Here you have one of the receptions. This is the reception in the tower block where one of my employees died. Here you can see the X-ray machine, quite heavy heavy X-ray machine. Everything were blown out of the block. So the next day to come, we established a more complete picture of the terrible and cruel action carried out by the terrorists. It was actually unbelievable that not many more than 8 individuals were killed by the bomb. Those of us running the crisis management staff had a number of huge challenges these days. More or less the entire governmental square were defined as the scene of crime by the police. We also had limited access to the buildings. The flow of information were not complete and often differentiated. The mandate of the GSSO were to some extent not clear. Cooperation between the GSSO, the police, the military and political level were not optimized. Most of the buildings were more or less open. Papers were flowing out from windows. Strong rooms were open. We had a concern whether there could be any sensitive and even classified documents exponated unprotected. The police investigators requested and demanded access to the electronic information in our ITV server that actually had tape information from all the security cameras in the governmental square, and they needed the pictures for analyze. And we knew that we also knew that there were lots of asbest in many of the old buildings, and that it could be risky if you sent anyone in there. And last but not least, the status of the damaged tower block was quite uncertain. Our guard central was located at the -1 level, straight under the block there. Further obstructions. Information and dialogue with injured and relatives were important. However, we actually failed. I have to be honest and say that we failed to fulfill that important task. We had to decide to evacuate our primary guard central after 3 days and establish an alternative solutions within 48 hours. We also had to plan for the human resources in a midterm perspective. That was really important. Some had to be recalled from the vacation. Others was told not to break their holiday, even if they wanted. Yes, of course, we actually wanted everyone that could come, but we also had to plan for the second and third and fourth week. We couldn't burn all the efforts the first week of the crisis. We needed and requested support from psychiatrists in the defense to debrief our operational personnel. Unfortunately, with some bureaucratical hurdles to pass to arrange for such military support to the civilian community. We had continuously and strong pressure from the media houses. And I haven't yet mentioned the situation at Utøya, where the terrorists killed 69 young persons at the Labour Party political summer camp. That was an even worse situation. However, we had more than enough with handling the situation at the governmental square. Information from Utøya could not help us, and we actually had to keep that event out of our mindset. Yeah. Here you see where the car was parked. That's the way out of the garage where I should be bicycling some few minutes later. This is 2 levels down. I think the motor block of the car was found down there, 2 levels down. Here you see the facade of the wire block, and you can see the windows and the effect of the folio on the windows. Excuse me. The terrorist attack wasn't only an attack on buildings and the number of people. It was felt like an attack on the nation and the democracy. The whole nation were showing lots of sympathy, not only with all the victims, but also with all of us that was indirectly affected. The nation's sympathy gave us all lots of strength during these days. We mourned by the loss of our dead colleagues and the tragedy that had hit us. But us with management responsibility especially also had to keep focused. My own biggest fear was actually to make a step out of the rational bubble I was in. I was actually not sure how I would handle to meet such an emotional opening. So the first 8 days after 22nd July, I worked a total of 135 hours. The short rest and sleep I had were ingested at the P-Hotel in Grensen, one level above the place for our crisis staff. And we all lived in our rational bubble with meetings, talks and decision-making processes running from very early morning to the late nights. Several days we ended with a walk down to the Oslo Cathedral where we could have some time for reflection and remembering our dead and one severely injured colleague and get some fresh strength as we felt that the flowers from all and everyone gave us. Some further challenges we met there. How long would the police stay and keep control of the area? The military units were actually prepared for releasing the police when they would withdraw. However, the military troops got the contra order when the police withdrew. Most of the troops and the guards of the GSSO had to secure most of the buildings by ourselves, supported by what I remember was 8 police posts. We rented barrier fences and support from different security companies, and with the full mobilization of our own security forces, we met the challenging task to protect the destroyed buildings. Most of the ministries, as you might know, had to move to alternate buildings around in Oslo and were more or less operational in a few days after the 22nd July. However, they had all a strong need for protection, and the pressure on the GSSO to support them with security services in new positions were heavy. The political message from the Prime Minister was crystal clear: the ministries shall not suffer. The government with its ministries are still fully operational. That was the message from the Prime Minister. After a number of uncoordinated security measures were executed from different levels and staffs also during these days, and the pressure from the media increased day by day. At this picture you can see where I had my office. This is taken some few weeks after the attack. And some questions I will never get any answer to. It just happened. We were 2 people in this corridor. My colleague was sitting there. I was sitting there. So we were lucky. And here you have all the flowers that gave us power. Here you have a picture from the guard central, taken actually in advance of the happening. I think this is from the Rose Walk downtown Oslo. Some words about the media focus. The first days, actually about 6 weeks, the media were showing quite sympathy and carefulness with us. Information from crime investigators were leaking to the media. Even information that had been classified. That was a really disappointment for us. Several times we had no choice and had to give supplementary and corrective information to the media without time for fully go through the process of declassifying possible classified information. Our own employees were impatient and expected us to give media the true and complete story. They felt blamed by the media. And the media always want and need the answer quite rapid to be the first to publish. And according to the law in Norway, the journalists or anyone else have the right to claim insight in every single document that not are classified or protected. And the post journals have to be open on internet so everyone can see and read what unclassified documents that are sent from the from and to the ministries. And all the different public agencies, directorates and affairs. And in the next step they can request request the documents to go through them. The media often requested information that was classified. They found it hard to understand that we not could declassify information for release before we had considered the value of the information in the documents. When the media not got the information they asked for from the official spokesman, the journalists often tried to address the individuals, the employees directly, and request the information they want. So, lesson learned, you should establish and inform all your employees clearly about your media policy to be sure none are spreading incomplete, classified or wrong information. However, it's important for me to underline that I absolutely not blame the media. The most of the journalists are doing a quite important and professional job aiming to bring the story to the people. The problem is that for us dealing with crisis management in such a situation, you actually not have time for the media. Some of the typical questions we faced were why and how could a car filled with explosives drive and park 2 meters from the main entrance of the block where the Prime Minister is sitting with his staff? Why was the car observed from the why wasn't the car observed from the guardroom when it arrived? Why didn't any of the security guards take any action? Pictures released from the police crime investigators 8 to 10 weeks after 22nd July shows the terrorist leaving the car. This picture you have on the screen now. The media highlighted, this is what the guardman could see from the guardroom. Nobody took any action. The fact was that this picture was the investigators was what the investigators had found on the server recording just below 200 cameras that was connected to the security system. The actual picture was enhanced in Photoshop to be as good as possible, and the referred picture were never displayed at any of the monitors in the guardroom. In our dialogue with the media, we had a huge dilemma. The need to protect sensitive and classified information, as well as the integrity of the political decision makers and from the management of the ministry. On the other side, the need to present correct information and defend our guardmen and women from wrongful criticism against their work. That will always be a dilemma. I will not conceal the fact that the human pressure, personally, was hard to face. In the end, more than I could handle. Anyhow, how much I wanted and tried, it was impossible for me to meet all the expectations. Sorry. Even with the long nights and weekends spent at work, the resources did not meet the requirements. We were tasked and presented expectations from all directions, from the employees, the unit representatives, the safety services, the ministries, customers, media, the 22nd July Commission, as well as the police. And a lot of resources had to be dedicated to the preparation for the court trial. The governmental medical team, also under my management, were pushed hard and had to balance carefully to meet the requested support to all the different research programs at the same time as they had to put priority on helping employees that needed their help. To carry my two hats, one as a victim, the other one as a manager for my other victims, was really difficult for me. When looking back, some of the most difficult was to take care of my own role as aggrieved. By technical reasons, I did not get status as formal aggrieved. Consequently, I did neither not get accept for my request for a legal aid lawyer. So by 12th March 2012, 8 months after the attack, I had no more to give. My battery was empty and it didn't charge anymore. Enough was enough. I left my position and the long sick leave was the next step. So a few months later, the court trial came up and I was in the line. I was then lined up to give my witness for the court. That opened an important door for me as victim. I also got the right to be supported by a legal aid lawyer. And during the court proceedings, I met the pressure from the media once again. My witness for the court, face to face with the terrorist, was an important milestone and a big step on my way back. My last interview for the media, hopefully forever, was given to the National Evening News at NRK that day. It was a bit strange for me to come to the court to give my witness. I actually got no good luck from the ministries or my employer in advance, and none of them took any contact with me after the court witness proof. To be quite honest, it was quite sad, but in the same time, it made that made it clear for me if I wanted to come back in business, I primarily had to trust on myself. So then we go to August 2012, time for reflection. When a huge crisis like this terrorist attack strikes us, it was surprising for me how lonely I often felt. Where was the support I had expected? Where was the recognition from my employer, our ministry, the customers, as well as my employees? The definitely strongest backing, understanding and support I got from my family and close friends. I'm glad that these kind and close people got me to understand that enough is enough. The life has so many other important values than the paid and unpaid work we are offering our employer. After what I considered as a long reconvalescence period of period in sick leave, I came back to work in August 2012. I had re-established the charging of my battery and were hungry for new and important tasks and challenges for my organization. Not as a manager for a huge division I had been in charge of, but more likely to share my experience and work with strategy, development and advising within the frame of security. I also got my trip to the mountain of Galdhøpiggen, another important milestone on my way back to business. Not with my daughter, as she had moved to Tromsø for studies, but together with my dear wife Merete and a friend couple, we had an exciting trip to Galdhøpiggen, as well as the glacier of Fairytale, Eventyrryssen, in the mid-August 2012, about 1 year after the happening that so fundamentally changed my life. And then to the lessons learned. First of all, stick to the basic principles of contingency, responsibility, equality, subsidiarity. And also a fourth principle that we learned more and more during the crisis management of this attack, cooperation. That will be really important for the future, the cooperation with the different authorities. Secondly, baseline security has to be adequate. Pre-warning cannot be expected. You need duplication of critical capacities. That's of vital importance. You need robust supplier agreements and relations. The good relations we had with our technical suppliers were really important the days after the attack. To re-establish the security solutions, the IT solutions, and so on. It's also important to have updated and trained contingency plans, also with your cooperating partners. And you should definitely have a plan for handling media. You should have it, and it should be communicated. It's often a good advice to try to visual different scene scenarios. Try to go through what can happen in my position. How will I handle such a situation? That has been good for me, and it's an important way of training in the military. And you should establish some plans for how and when to contact relatives after such attack. The problem for us, we didn't actually know whether people were had died or whether they were alive, and it is not the employer's responsibility to contact the relatives. It's actually the police's mandate. Confidentiality, competence, and intuition is crucial. The autopilot can help you. It's important with the to be creative. Determination and leadership is also important. Contingency plans are important, but they will never cover all and every situation detailed. It's important to make delegation of authority as long down as possible. You should plan your human resources and manage them carefully, so you can face the situation also 1 week in advance. You should debrief your operational personnel, that's important. It's important to rest and prepare for tomorrow. You have to take care of your employees. Have an open house where people can meet and speak about the situation. Information and dialogue with next of kin is often difficult. You should have some plans for that. Coordination of information, employees, or information to employees, owners, customers, media, also important. Catastrophes make focus. Media, they will show you respect, but the respect period is often limited to 6 weeks. After that, they are going much harder to get the answers they want. Structuring and prioritizing of efforts are crucial. When the situation is stabilized, you should have a discussion with your owner about the priorities. Something has to wait. You should show your employees recognition. And last but not least, information. It is a huge requirement for information, and you should be aware of that. Some more lessons learned related to the human perspective. Take action in advance to prevent any irreparable damages. Acknowledge the situation, and you should find a good dialogue partner. You should seek some professional assistance. You definitely need it if you are totally burned out. And what was important for me was to get control with my own time, that nobody else could put anything into my diary. Avoid too ambitious programs and goals. Find and make awareness of the small and large pleasures of life. You should read and learn from other experiences. Get the best practice. You should draw up the ideal picture of your future situation and life. What is your next goal? And of course, physical well-being is always important. So, the terrorist attack in the governmental square of Oslo fundamentally changed my life. During my long walk back, I have been through a number of difficult choices, many of them having major impact on my remaining years in duty before retiring. One of the high value wins my career related choices have caused is more time for family and for activities I not have had time for during my many years in various management positions. I did reach the mountain of Galdhøpiggen and also the Ferritel Glacier in extraordinary good weather conditions, as you can see on this picture. You can also see the two poems here made by the Norwegian poets and musicians Trond-Viggo Torgersen and Bjørn Eidsvåg. These are illustrating most of the long way I feel I have been walking as a human being as I faced the reality and left my job in March 2012. The poems are a strong reminder to me about the responsibilities all individuals have by themselves for taking own actions, decisions, and to work hard to recover and re-enter the scene. When you are doing so, there will always be professionals, family members, colleagues, and friends out there to support you. But you have to main the decision and hard work yourself. So I hope my lecture has given you some inspiration for further reflections and development of skills with the aim of becoming as prepared as possible if, or more precise to say when, a situation occur as the one we had 22nd July 2011. And that concludes my presentation. I was afraid I would not come through. I made it in 50 minutes, and we still have some few minutes. If you have any questions, please be free to give your question in Norwegian as well. Are there any international students here today? Yeah. Please be free. You might meet a such a situation. And
I can start with a question. If you want to look at a positive side on a crisis, I know it's very hard in this type of crisis, but you can also think of crisis as an opportunity for change. If you think about this crisis, did anything come out on the other end and that actually improved?
Absolutely, very much. As I started with, I have many years of experience from the defense, and as an officer, we used to say that we actually need a small war sometimes to get more funding for what we are doing, and it's quite true. I can tell you that we had been working for about 7 years to get a midlife update of the guarding central. But the politicians were not so keen on spending that much money on the guarding central. It didn't used to be a good political issue to spend 50 or 100 millions on the guard central, but of course after the 22nd July it was quite a different situation. So we need to be focused now and then, and to go through the plans, contingency plans. We have learned quite a lot, and of course, it was well. You will always be able to find something new to be better on. Yeah, up there.